Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good Friday morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, TGIF, welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us. Happy Labor Day weekend. Please take a rest from your labors sometime during this holiday weekend. You deserve it, especially after what we've been going through. So thank you for taking the time out to be with us. And today we have Mr. Paul B. Shelton on with us from Warwick Shore to give us an economic update. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Gretchen. How are you doing today?
I cannot begin to tell you how glad I am. It is Friday. However, now that it's here, I kind of want to just stretch the weekend out. So,
yeah.
You know, how are you doing? How are things going?
I am doing well. TGIF as well. I am very glad that it's Friday. It's been a long week. It's been a long month, and it's been a long year thus far and a long pandemic. So I think we've all been really stretched, and I really like the sentiment starting the show about really taking some time this weekend to decompress and just relax. Because if you look at some of the economic data as well as things going on around us, you know, you can have a little fear and reason not to relax on a daily basis. So, I
have
that sentiment as well.
Yeah, we've got to work. We got to work on that. We got to have that work life balance. We got to have that life balance. You know. So, anyway, so I wanted to ask you about an article that I saw that talked about. Not being the same, businesses not being the same when the pandemic is over, in terms of people going back to work, that employers are going to probably have to get used to less people wanting to work inside the workplace. What kind of impact is that going to have? We're already starting to see some of that anyway, where there's this pull toward getting back to what people are calling normal, and then, you know, these people are saying, well, you know, normal doesn't necessarily work for me anymore. I've discovered a new normal. I like my new normal. Let's see what we can work out.
Yeah, so that's a very interesting dynamic, and it's really starting to play out more so now as we're, you know, getting more people back into the workforce and returning back to full employment. There is a large appetite. You know, as we transitioned over the years, the appetite was kind of brewing, but it really was highlighted during the pandemic, or has been highlighted during the pandemic, that many individuals prefer that work-life balance. And that is truly driven by being able to work remotely or work virtually. And that's, you know, becoming to, you know, show a push and pull on economics. You know, a lot of people are really desiring, you know, the ability to work from home, and the ability to have that flexibility to be able to travel easier, to be able to have more time with the family, with the kids, enjoy, you know, extracurricular activities with the kids, and even make it just that much easier for you to make it to doctor's appointments during the week for the kids. For example, giving you a specific example here, in insurance underwriting, that's something that was starting to transfer before the pandemic away from the brick-and-mortar offices, but has, you know, exponentially transitioned during the pandemic. And now that, you know, many insurance companies, you know, they stayed open during the pandemic. They were not like retail stores where they closed. So most of those employees transitioned to working from home. In the insurance industry, for the last 10 years, many underwriters had the option of working from home 2 to 3 days a week. And so they were partially already doing that. But the pandemic gave us a real-life example of being able to work from home and being highly productive in doing so. So many underwriters now in the insurance industry are working from home, and those that are working in an office setting or that may be required to return to an office setting are often looking competitors, you know, for the opportunities to be able to work from home. So that kind of provides that push and pull on economics there, you know, where, you know, suppliers are wanting people to come back to the office in certain stances, but the people that are demanding, those demanders are, you know, kind of, you know, taking the opposite stance and saying, hey, we really don't want to work. Are those the suppliers of that work don't really want to have to go back to the office? In most scenarios, if they don't have to, they prefer to stay home. And I think, you know, just outside of, you know, just the insurance industry, and that's just one specific industry, looking at one specific job detail as underwriters in insurance, I think we're going to continue to see this thing play out across all industries. You know, we have telehealth, which was something that really didn't exist 10 years ago. That's something that is now a major factor in all healthcare across not only the United States, but across the globe as we continue to move forward. Economic gains potentially in this, because it will drive innovation and it will drive technology as, you know, we become more innovative in things that we can do remotely and virtually and still be able to provide the same products and services for many of our clients and customers that we need, you know, for everyday life.
Well, I'm thinking also for the employee, it's like, wow, I actually have the option of having windows in my office. You know, we get a chance to kind of make our environment more comfortable and I would think more inspirational, therefore maybe being more productive. Possibly. The other thing I'm looking at is like, gee, that's less gas, that's less wear and tear on the car, you know. And so that's got to be having some sort of impact as well, where gas stations are saying, the demand is not necessarily there. We need to have to, you know, need to change our strategy in terms of, you know, how much gas costs, because I know we had in this area a spike for a while, and then, you know, then it went back down. And I'm like, what is that all about? You know, why they spiked in the first place? And then the gas station, I go to Sam. My gas station, it didn't really go up that much. You had other places where it was 30 cents a gallon more. I was like, you know, this is much more worth it to me to pay the Sam's membership for gas and so many other things, you know, auto repair and supplies for the house and office supplies and all that type of stuff. Then, you know, it's worth it to me to pay less and then to run down maybe a couple of miles further than my gas station on the corner that's charging me 30 cents more a gallon.
Correct. Yeah, and that is very true. And we did see some volatility in the crude oil market. Partial of that, a very small portion of that, was related to some of the ancillary volatility that we saw as we ended this war in Afghanistan. But, you know, OPEC has made some decisions about their supply output. But overall, you're completely correct. It's supply and demand that's fundamentals that are going to drive the economics of gas prices. And with more people staying home, more people working from home and having that convenience to not be on the road, not have business travel, that demand on that natural resource is going to be much lower. And hence, you know, it will drive down gas prices, which is overall good for the overall, you know, economy. Like, if you, just through the month of August, the average gas price nationwide was $2.95. When you compare that to a year ago, August, the average price was $2.07. But we've seen a significant rise, and that's all attributed to the amount of people that have gone back to work. But if you take that back and look, you know, back to where we were in the mid-teens, looking from 2010 through 2014, you know, we were at $3.50 a gallon, $3.60 a gallon, you know, and that's looking at 2014, 2013, respectively, on a national average. So even though gas prices are a little higher right now than they were a year ago, they're still much more palatable as of today than they were several years ago. And I think this trend that we've seen since 2015, pretty much 2014, with us trending down in the national average consecutively year after year, I think that's going to continue. And that's something that we're going to see continue, not only because we're going to have more people off the road, more people working from home, working remotely, but we're starting to shift towards more renewable energy sources as well. So that does produce a good for the overall economy. It produces a good for, you know, us as consumers. As I often say, gas prices act as a de facto tax on our pocketbooks and on the economy itself. So, you know, we can't get around, you know, paying for gas, paying for food oil. It's so prevalent in our everyday and common lives that we need it. We have to pay for it. And when the prices of gas rise, oftentimes we have to offset that with discretionary spending, and that's going out shopping, going out to restaurants and things of that nature. So as we see this trend, it can definitely bode well for the consumer.
Now, this also working from home, there's been kind of an effect in two other areas, too, in terms of people, I guess, staying home cooking and shopping, but also ordering out. And I'm thinking that some of these delivery services have seen some increases and some benefits from this trend.
Correct. And that's one of the things that I was talking about that is a kind of a push to the economy. There's these new like Uber Eats and a lot of those, you know, companies out there, a lot of those delivery services that were not prevalent, you know, 5-10 years ago. Now that is kind of the lifeblood of the many college students, and not just college students, but many of those that are, you know, home with family, you know, those workers and families that are choosing not to go grocery shopping, but choosing to have things ordered and, you know, possibly delivered to their homes, are, you know, ordering out restaurants and eating in. So that created a whole new subsector in our economy that was not there. So that's part of that innovation and new technology that is coming about with this new shift that we're seeing right now as a result of the pandemic.
One thing I want to talk about is the impact of the shipping crises that we're having now. One of my many hats, I do a part-time job that relies on a lot of people having merchandise shipped to them, and there I see more and more shipping delays. One of the things that I heard that there was shipping containers sitting off of the coast, the west coast of the United States, and that there are businesses that are waiting for shipping containers to become available in order to ship their merchandise. I know we're having a shipping crisis right now, especially when it comes to like food items that may be unfortunately sitting in warehouses, you know, that have to be replaced. So what kind of impact is that having?
So that is having an effect on our economy, and you're completely correct about that. And it is affecting the economy as a whole, but adversely affecting certain sectors of the economy differently. For example, you know, those perishable goods, those items, you know, they can't sit forever. Those items have to be delivered. And we have many tankers, like you said. There's a lot of tankers sitting out there with containers stacked, you know, 5 and 6 stories high, sometimes 10 stories high, with containers on them, full of, you know, goods. Sometimes they're, you know, dry goods, But there has been a significant spike in the demand for consumer goods, not only in the United States, but across Europe as well. And that has been combined with disruption because of the coronavirus. And it's caused, you know, the global shipping markets to drive up costs. For one thing, the cost of moving containers around, as well as delays in that supply chain, which has hurt many industries. So those delays in supply chain have hurt, for example, the auto industry. Many automotive makers use chips inside of their technology for new cars now, and a lot of those microchips that are made in, often in China and different, you know, places around the world are not able to get to the manufacturers, which causes a delay for them to deliver the finished good of a car to local dealerships. There are some dealerships here locally that have had a significant amount of, or I should say a decrease, significantly decreased amount of inventory when it comes to new cars on the lot, just because of the chip shortage out there. And that's just one example of one industry that's been affected in that respect. Also, as I, you know, mentioned, there's the supply shortages in Britain caused, you know, like McDonald's restaurants to pull milkshakes, you know, and some bottled drinks off their menus. You know, and these are things that, you know, organizations, you never want to do. You never want to compromise your offerings or have to, you know, reduce what you're offering to your client, because you want to maintain that corporate consistency. But there's supply chain disruptions out there that are causing organizations to have to adjust just to navigate through the times that we're currently in right now. So it is a significant problem, and it does cause a pain for us as consumers when we're not able to get the things that we need, desire, or want. And it also, you know, kind of trickles and causes a pain for, you know, those suppliers of those goods and services, because it delays them in getting paid for, you know, the supplier that they're supplying for the finished good, and it delays the finished good from being delivered and from us buying it. So it kind of bottlenecks and slows down everything. And since there is an issue with that, there is a increase in, you know, a rise in prices for goods to be, you know, shipped around the world. So that damage to the supply chain is really causing increased prices for producers to get their products to us, which in turn will lead to increased prices for us on the consumer end.
And I did want to really touch on that, because I get, you know, I'm trying to explain this to people when they're calling and they're talking about, why is my delivery being pushed? And I try to explain it, and it's like it goes in one ear and out the other. And I want to say, haven't you been paying attention? This is not, you know, this is a nationwide and a worldwide problem right now. And, you know, everybody's trying to do the best they can, and, you know, at the same time, I mean, it doesn't mean that there aren't some other glitches in the system, but that's just one of them. But anyway, we're going to talk more about what's going on with our economy when we get back. We're here with Paul Lee Shelton of Warwick Shore. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. If you have questions of Paul, the number is 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. We'll be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar. Or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Hello, welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are here with Paul Lee Shelton of Warwick Shore. And if you have questions, the number is 516-387-1944 or a comment. We're talking about the economy. And so, Paul, tell me about then and the natural disasters. Let's talk about that impact right now.
So, fortunately, the impact has not been as severe as we predicted earlier, or I should say as what we braced ourselves for earlier when it comes specifically to the end of the war in Afghanistan. This was a very taxing war, a very long war, and after 20 years still spending trillions of dollars and spending the lives of many of our, you know, fellow Americans, service members, it seems like we made little to no progress, unfortunately. So outside of the kind of mental defeat or the anguish that we see from that and that I hear from many service members, especially my father, who is a retired Air Force veteran, we're not seeing the economic, I should say, parlays that we were expecting. However, I would say that if tensions do rise between the United States and Afghanistan, or specifically between the United States and ISIS or the Taliban or anything of that nature, that could potentially lead us to more of a conflict situation. That would weigh heavily, you know, on our economy, and that's something that as an economist and portfolio manager that I look at and keep my eye on and try to prepare defensively to structure the portfolios to prepare for those such things of that nature. When it comes to our natural disasters, those things are something that hard to plan for. We can always prepare and try to plan, but those are, you know, the acts of God, things that do happen. And my thoughts and prayers are, you know, with all of our loved ones and everyone and that was been affected most recently by Hurricane Ida. And those that came later in future, you know, storms that are going to come this year, those things are something that's very unfortunate. And they affect our economy, sometimes in a negative way, and sometimes, oftentimes in a negative way, and sometimes in a positive way. Typically, when we do see tropical storms, tropical depressions, or hurricanes in the Gulf region, in the Gulf of Mexico, where a lot of our crude oil mining takes place offshore, that does disrupt a little bit of that that supply-demand aspect on there and does cause a slight effect when it comes to crude oil prices and gas prices overall. Additionally, whenever we see widespread destruction like we've seen recently in New Orleans, that does help rejuvenating the economy in a standpoint of construction, you know, spending will increase a little bit more in that area. So it does play a negative role in our economy, but it does also provide some sort of lift in our economy. There could be a small silver lining in there as well.
I know it's hard to see the good in all of that you see on the news with the floods and the deaths and the power outages and all types of stuff, and especially when it seems like, it almost feels like we've just been through this, although, like what they were saying, Katrina's 16 years. Depending on who you ask, 16 years can be a drop in the bucket in terms of time, or it could just be a very long time, but when it comes to things that are tragic and devastating, it's hard to look at that being so far away in the past, you know. But, you know, I think, like one of the things you were talking about with the positivity is that I think they think that this may not have, could have been worse had it not been for the experience of Katrina, right?
Exactly. Correct. And as someone that, you know, that was born in Biloxi, Mississippi, and I was in New Orleans a few weeks before Katrina hit, And going back through that region over the last handful of years and still seeing the destruction that was left behind and the things that were no longer there, and many of the people that were living, still living in the Biloxi area that were no longer in permanent housing and that were still in temporary housing, even, you know, 12 years later after Katrina, you realize the brevity of how bad that storm and how bad the destruction was. So my thoughts and prayers are definitely with those and everyone that's recovering in that area. It's not easy. It's not easy by any means, especially in a time where you're dealing with a pandemic and you're dealing with, you know, recovering many jobs that were lost in that, specifically in that region of Louisiana and Mississippi and kind of the outskirts of that, those areas. So it's a tough thing, but we have to try to look for the silver lining somewhere to try to continue to keep us sane and understand that ultimately God is still with us.
Amen to that, for sure. We just don't realize. We take a lot of stuff for granted and can't imagine sometimes how much worse it could be. But if God wasn't in it, it could be just something totally different, you know.
Definitely.
But so, I mean, some of the things we, I guess, can look at is hopefully, you know, when the worst has passed after this hurricane season and people start to be able to rebuild, that's going to be hopefully some jobs.
Correct.
The difference is having how you conduct some of these jobs in the midst of still dealing with COVID-19. That's an additional burden to add to what's going on. And, you know, we're seeing here in Florida unfortunately, we're coming up on the peak of hurricane season. We don't know exactly what's going to happen for the next few months, but we're dealing still with our own issues in terms of, even though they say the numbers are declining, we still have hospital beds that are at you know, almost gone still. You know, I mean, everything has not, I mean, and people talk about turning back to normal. And I guess that's another thing I wanted to ask you about, Paul. What is, I guess, what is good? What is normal? What is good? What is good about what was normal? And in terms of the economy, what do we expect after this in terms of a new normal?
Yeah, and that's a good question. And first off, you know, what we considered as normal historically has been changed. And I think we're still in a point where we're transitioning to define what the new normal will be going forward. And that's something that, you know, is going to be kind of hard, you know, for some of us to digest and understand and embrace, and maybe easier, you know, for others, you know, going forward in the future. But it's a cyclical thing that we're seeing right now with this paradigm shift in our economy as what the new normal is. And we've seen it play out generationally, historically. If you look through the history books, you know, we've seen it play out, you know, after the influenza pandemic where things shifted. And there was a shift in technology at that point in time to having more an increase in technology in manufacturing and things of that nature that are already starting to take place, but it expedited that. It kind of brought forth the new norm of the Industrial Revolution and pushed us into greater technology in that respect, and also greater technology when we look into our monetary system and we look into our agricultural system and things of that nature. I believe that's something that we're going to continue to see play out, and we're going to see it continue to, you know, recycle itself. As of now, we're seeing that increase in innovation, increase in technology. Again, as we're going through this paradigm shift, leaving what was normal to us before, being a 9-to-5, going into work, to a meeting, having a handshake agreement with someone, to this new kind of normal that we're starting to think that we're going to see, which is being more of a virtual society, being able to conduct business in California, Florida, New York, London, Japan, Tokyo, all in the course of one day without having to travel physically to all those places, but be there virtually and without having a handshake, using a DocuSign to be able to authorize an agreement and move forward all, you know, within the course of minutes. So, you know, it's an increase in technology, increase in innovation, which is an increase in our overall, you know, livelihood. One thing that we've seen as we did in the Industrial Revolution, we saw, you know, technology increase when it came to food manufacturing, which kind of matured and then kind of led us a little bit down the road of having more corn syrup and a lot of things that were used at that time are hurting us now. But where we are now, in addition to that innovation and technology that we're seeing in our monetary system and in technology itself and healthcare and things of that nature, we're seeing that increase in innovation when it comes to our food machinery and corporations now and us having a healthier lifestyle. One thing that has come about through this pandemic or that is a byproduct of this pandemic is humans across the globe have taken a greater responsibility in their own health. They're focused on their health. They're focusing on what they're consuming. They're looking for healthier options when they're eating now. And this is something that, it, you know, was a part of the paradigm shift in the early 1920s after, you know, the influenza pandemic. And it's something that we're seeing shift and mature now again. So these things are very, very cyclical that happen. And I think we may not really truly see what the new norm is. I think we have a taste of it right now. We may not truly see it or realize it for another year or two and go forward from there. But I think we are seeing something totally different all across our economy. Seeing it in education. We're seeing it in the way we work and interact with our coworkers, interact with our neighbors, even in our faith system. We're seeing it in the way that we worship and interact with our churches and things of that nature, in our governmental system. You know, Congress is using Zoom quite often now, and things are carried out that way. So I think that it's a good thing. As always, we have to embrace technology because it's ever increasing and it's ever changing. And, you know, this new norm is still defining itself.
So we're going to talk about that more when we come back, because I also wanted to talk about it kind of links to something that this economist said about the economy and what we're going through right now. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and the jobs numbers when we come back. We're here with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwick Shore talking about the economy. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Swiffer Sweeper cleans so completely, you'll never go back to your old broom again.
Now a song for Mary from a Mr. Broom.
New Swiffer Sweepers redesigned to clean corners, and it traps and locks 50% more dirt, dust, and hair than a broom. So go all the way clean. New Swiffer. Clean better or your money back. Guaranteed.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs. Dedicated to serving our families.
Hi, welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thank you so much for being with us today. We are here with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwick Shore, and we're talking about the economy. And if you want to comment or question, the number is 516-387-1944. So, and his name, I had it and just escaped me, but there was a economist that was on CNBC that was saying that we need to take advantage of this crisis, you know, and so what does that mean exactly?
Well, I didn't hear exactly that the comment or see that piece or read that piece there, but when I hear people speaking about taking advantage of where we are and taking advantage of our crises, it means coming out on the other end as a leaner, smarter, more educated, and more productive society in all, in general. And I think that's something that, you know, we're really, really leaning towards and being able to take advantage of. One thing that this pandemic highlighted was a ton of waste in our employment, the supply chain, and a lot of things of that nature. And it's kind of weaned out a lot of those unnecessary challenges that, you know, many corporations had, you know, with having waste and having a lot of processes on the balance sheet and in the financial statements that were holding back the productivity of the organization. When you're going through a pandemic and when you're going through a deep recession, CEOs and the financial officers of organizations really look at, you know, where we could trim the fat to be able to become more leaner, more successful, and eliminate a lot of the waste. And those were some of the things that, you know, took place and that has taken place and that continues to take place now as we are evolving, I guess, seeking that new norm, as you were mentioning before. Many jobs that were there before, unfortunately, were phased out in replacement of other, you know, of technology and things that are moving forward, which puts a strain and causes, you know, an area of secular unemployment and structural unemployment, I should say, for many individuals. But it also, you know, moves towards more of a lean business, more of a lean economy as we're pushing through that. So when I'm hearing that statement and when I hear that we, you know, need to come out of this smarter and wiser, I'm believing, you know, that's what they're referring to, and also the mindset of not making the same decisions that we made before that kind of led us to having a lot of the froth and a lot of the waste inside of our corporations and our corporate balance sheet.
Sorry, my chin and that mute button don't get along. But anyway, and the person I was referring to, his name was Joseph Stiglitz. He's the one that made that comment. So we shouldn't let a good crisis go to waste. That's what he was saying. So I kind of understand part of that. to me, and I could be wrong, you know, we're talking about streamlining and getting, you know, smarter and everything, and that's all well and good. But to me, this pandemic has put a damper on personal, interpersonal relationships. You know, I mean, Zoom is great and everything, but there's, to me, just still something lacking and something missing about the face-to-face communication. I think being able to read body language is very important. It kind of determines what the trust factor is in a relationship, you know, in determining whether or not I want to do business with you or I want to take my business somewhere else. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? Because I just think, you know, it makes it, I guess, very mechanical, but I think the human element is still needed in business dealings.
It is still needed in business dealings, and this is something that, and you're 100% correct when you say, you know, that this human element that we are losing is hindering and hurting the flow of business, and I believe society overall, in my opinion. We've seen this, you know, just with the rise of the internet, you know, the disconnect between human emotional feelings and reality begins to separate itself from, you know, from each other. This was something that was noticed in when online dating, being able to go out and have a conversation, you know, between a man and woman and be able to understand, you know, that I can you know, effectively, you know, convey that I am interested in speaking with you, as opposed to just flipping through a bunch of pictures and hitting a check mark where there are hearts, whether I like you or don't like you, and go from there. You lose a lot of, like you said, that element of trust, the element of foundation that is needed so often in a relationship. And it becomes a standpoint where you could fight, you know, yes to like someone, fight yes to get married, and then next thing you know, our divorce rates are much higher now than they were, you know, 30, 40 years ago, 40 years ago. And, you know, I don't know how much of that you can directly blame on that internet society or that lack of ability of being able to build a foundational relationship based on human interaction, based on that trust. But it is there. And I think that continues to mature over to the business aspect of the world. Unfortunately, you know, we're not building those relationships, are not developing new relationships, I should say, through this Zoom society or through this internet or mobile society that we are in, not as many as we have in the past. I'm more of a traditionalist when it comes to business. I like a handshake. You know, that's something I was taught, to look someone square in the eyes and shake their hand. And that handshake and your word is, to me, contractual. You know, it's binding. You know, you develop that trust. You can lean on somebody and rely on that handshake and understand that. Meeting someone via Zoom is hard to do. It's hard to develop that. It's hard to build that rapport. It's hard to understand that body language and to really read, you know, if that person is, you know, being 100% truthful to you or not. So that element is painful in our society. And that may be one of the aspects of this new norm that comes about that may not be so pleasing.
Yeah, I agree with you when you talk about the internet and the difficulty that we were already seeing there. I think and I could be wrong. Okay, I'm no psychologist. But I think that the internet and doing a lot of things with the use of technology has led us to believe that life is very cut and dry, and that's the way it should be, and that's the way it's supposed to be. And we lose, you talk about the divorce rate going up. I think part of that is because we lose having to deal with the nuances of what makes a man and what makes a woman, and how to learn and navigate those relationships. You know, we expect everybody to be the same, and it's not. And then, you know, if I have to deal with you personally, then oh my God, I got to, you know, kind of look at you a little closer. I've got to, you know, talk with you a little more. I've got, you know, there are things that I have to do over and above just the basics, and there are things that are going to take me outside of my comfort zone just to develop a relationship with you. And for some reason, we think that's wrong, and actually that's just normal, you know,
yeah,
in my opinion.
Correct.
You know,
yep,
so.
I agree.
Anyway, before we go further, because there's a couple other things I want to talk about, let's get to the jobs numbers. Some people aren't happy with those today.
Yeah, so there was some disappointments that came out of with the Bureau of Labor Statistics when they released the job report this morning at 8:30 a.m., total non-farm payroll employment rose by 235,000 in the month of August. The unemployment rate did decline by 2 percentage points to 5.2%, which was, you know, reported earlier today, and which is a positive thing that we see a reduction in the unemployment rate. However, that reduction, you know, is kind of offset those, the lower number of increased jobs, which we were expecting somewhere around 750,000 jobs that would have been added to the economy. That was kind of offset by the participation rate, which caused us to, you know, see that reduction in the unemployment rate there. So it's really not a true tale, or not the most positive or rosy tale of why unemployment did reduce, or why the unemployment rate, I should say, reduced in the month of August. Some of the things that were noted with this, and it's not great for Central Florida and for our region is that the sector that, you know, did not perform well was the leisure and hospitality. There was approximately zero new jobs that were added in that. And we know our economy is heavily based on that. We did see a significant reduction in retail jobs, which is also goes until dovetail kind of with that leisure and hospitality, which is something that we were, you know, kind of expecting that we would see. There's been some softness in many of the retail names. If you look at like Ross Stores, if you look at TJX, which is TJ Maxx, and some other you know, retailers out there, there's been some volatility in their stocks recently. And we were expecting to see, you know, some of that play out because of the employment situation that they're currently struggling with as of right now. But for our local economy, that is not the greatest thing for us to see that struggle nationally across those particular sectors and sub-industries because that affects so much. As of right now on a national level, we've edged down to roughly 8.4 million people that are currently still unemployed, which is better than where we were at the height of the pandemic, but still nowhere where we were before the pandemic at about 5.7 million people. So there is still some work ahead of us to get done. The one thing that I would advise and that I would, you know, bring forth as a notice to everyone is that historically August has been the month with the most volatility when it comes to the labor statistics. August is typically a month where we expect a lot of government jobs to soar back, and those government jobs are often classified with public education, K through 12, and even, you know, secondary and higher education and universities and things of that nature, which we didn't see that really take place in the month. Very possible that we could see, you know, some of those pent-up jobs that were supposed to come back in August, you know, resume in September. So it's very possible that everything may transport to September and everything will even out, or that we may have an outperformance in September, you know, due to the government sector overall and then that subsector of education jobs coming back in. But that was one subset that we did see, where there was a significant lack of educational jobs or people coming off unemployment that typically file for unemployment during the summer months that work in education, coming back to, you know, the workforce as a whole. I mentioned it maybe in early August on our previous call how, you know, open house, it was much different. You know, than it had been in previous years. You know, my kids returned back to brick and mortar this year, which I am still cringing about if I want them to be there or not with all the COVID protocols and everything going on and positivity rates in the schools. But there was a noticeable difference in the amount of classrooms that were occupied. It seemed like every other classroom in the building was vacant and used as storage and did not have a teacher assigned to it. I know my specific elementary school, where my kids go to school, went from three PE teachers down to one, and the music teacher is currently in charge of the run club, which was, you know, with the PE department before. So we've seen that difference, and we've seen that contraction all across the country when it comes to educational employment. So that was the big driver, you know, of the down data for the month of August. Hopes are that we can see a rebound in that respect in September, but it's very possible that we could not, that we may not see that.
Right. We're going to take our final break, and when we come back, I wanted to talk to you more. I was saving this to the end. I want to talk to you more about your experience in terms of taking the kids back to school, because we did talk a little bit about that since our last show. So let's talk about that when we come back. We are here with Paul V. Shelton of Warwick Shore. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. If you have questions or comments, the number is 516-387-1944, and we will be right back.
Hi, I'm Tim Garrison. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the yard with you. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chillin'?
This is Douglas Dobbs, owner and funeral director at Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community with 2 generations of family funeral service. With the recent addition of my son Brandon, we are here to take care of the needs of Central and West Orlando. From simple cremation to a full burial, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here to help you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us on this beautiful Friday. I hope that you are preparing for a nice, well, relaxing if you want it to be, or thrill-seeking if you want it to be, but make it your own Labor Day weekend. Just enjoy it and take full advantage of it. You know, I'm looking forward to at least catching one movie and you know, some other things. Are still busy, though. It just doesn't go away. Next week, though, we got Kevin Anderson back next week at the end of the week. We're going to talk about a few things. You know how it is when Kevin's on. And so also tomorrow, by the way, because we're back in football season coming up this week, this coming week, National Tailgating Day is tomorrow. So, you know, you might want to see, you know, do you have everything? Are you still tailgating? Do you have everything for a good tailgate outing? So, you know, if you're doing some of that stuff, you know, keep that in mind. But, Paul, tell me about your back-to-school experience, because I know you had some concerns.
Yes, yes, I did. And before I'll get to that, I want to say I am happy that college football is back. I'm a huge college football fan. I braved it, stayed up, and was at the UCF game last night, left there around 1:45 in the morning. I was happy to see them win, and I am a big tailgater, so I will be looking forward to that show as well. But I did have, I didn't have such a...
My team didn't do that well, but I still say, go Bulls! Go Bulls! Anyway,
there you go. Yeah, there you go. You know, and I was rooting for you guys too against NC State. You know, I'm a conference man, so we're all in it together. But I getting back to school, you know, it has been exciting for the kids being home for the last year and change, I should say, with getting back to school, seeing their teachers, specifically my fifth grader, who is a senior, the big man on campus now at his elementary school, and seems like senioritis is setting in, you know, in a 10-year-old, which is pretty odd. But he's very excited about being back at school, and he is very adamant about wearing his mask. I would say out of all of the people in the house, all, you know, of the six of us, you know, he wears his mask religiously, and he's not ashamed to wear his mask. He's a 10-year-old that wants the vaccine because he wants to be safe. He believes in it. You know, he has his faith, believes in God, but he wants his vaccine and he wants to wear his mask, which is a good thing. It's just unfortunate what we're seeing now in our society when it comes to the mask and the unmasked, the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. Playing such a brutal role, and it seems like really an attack of the enemy and of the devil that's really spewing this down into our society, pinning one side against the other. And it's really driving wedges between friends. It's driving wedges not only between adult friends, but children friends as well. There's been instances, you know, my son has told me where, you know, a child that chooses not to wear his mask would try to tell him not to wear his. And it's become, you know, to a point where, you know, my son's like, I don't want to you know, hang out with him anymore or be his friend because he makes me uncomfortable because I choose to wear my mask. And we have to understand that this is not something that 10-year-olds are just coming up with on their own. There's a lot of opinions that are coming from mom and dad and things of that nature. But it is really hurtful and it's really painful for our kids. I mean, they're going through so much already, you know, living through a pandemic and having what is normal disrupted for them as children, as kids, to have to deal with the psychological burden of how do I respond when someone is pressuring me to take off my mask or someone's telling mm-hmm. me I should take off my mask and knowing the brevity in the situations that if I do, what the ramifications could be. Not just that I, you know, ramifications that if I were to do something wrong, I can get in trouble at school, but if I take off my mask, you know, one of my loved ones could die. My baby brother that's a 1-year-old, you know, could catch the virus and be sick or, you know, just the disruptions that it can cause in the family life. When you have to bring kids home in quarantine, which so many people have had to do so far this school year, my fifth grader, he has two classes. He has his homeroom class and then his afternoon class that he goes to for math and science. The first 3 days of this week, his afternoon class only had two of the 17 students present, him and another student, two students present. The other 15 students were on quarantine. So just think about that one class there that is down to two students, and these are all because of COVID protocols, because of, you know, siblings or parents or other people outside of the classroom where these kids have to miss school. So that means there's at least 15 moms and or dads that are having to miss work, and the expense that that puts on the economy, the expense that that puts on mom and dad's pocketbooks at that time, financially and emotionally, it can really be a toll on it. And it's very hard when you hear your 10-year-old, you know, express to you that, you know, he is contemplating his friendship with someone because they're forcing him or making him feel like he's forced it to take off his mask, and not just forced to take off his mask, but they question his faith in God, and saying, if you believe in God, why don't you take your, you know, you take your mask off. I believe in God. I don't wear my mask. And to me, the Bible says, you know, tempt not, you know, the Father. And that's something that is tempting, you know, the Father, because we all have the knowledge of right and wrong. We all have a decision to make. And the one thing I challenged my son with is I asked him if, you know, we stopped and he and I, if he was standing in the middle of the highway and a car was barreling down the highway towards him, if he moved out of the way, if he moved out of the middle of the street and went to the sidewalk, does that mean he lacks faith in God? And no, that does not mean he lacks faith in God. It doesn't. He made the decision in the fullness and the rightness of his mind to get out of harm's way. Just like he's making the decision to wear the mask himself to protect himself. So,
well,
you
he's
know,
wearing
I,
the mask
say,
also to protect everybody else
others.
Because,
correct.
You know, I mean,
exactly.
He doesn't know if he's asymptomatic and they have it and they pass it along to someone else.
Exactly.
I hate that. It sounds like a new version of bullying. So, but
to me,
you know,
it is.
We'll definitely keep you in prayer. Thank you for being with us, Paul, today, and look forward to having you back next month. And we'll keep you all in prayer for sure. Have a great weekend. Take care of yourself.
You too. God bless.
God bless. And thank you all for listening. This has been G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good. Entertainment. Be well. Be safe. Be blessed. And please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.